This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com. It is an interactive website that allows trainers to create exercise programs online and communicate with clients. It's the best place that I've found to work with clients, the most efficient way, whether it be distance coaching clients or in person. Check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. This week's episode of the FitCast is episode number 249. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and we got an awesome show lined up for you this week. Nice and concise. We got Nick Winkelman coming up in a couple minutes, but I just want to give you guys a quick heads up that, like I mentioned last time, we're kind of just going to go through 250. It's not going to be something special. We're just going to keep delivering interviews because I kind of put together a laundry list of people. I'm like, going into 2012 or 2013 or whatever. So who do I want to interview? And I kind of created a list. I just started shooting out emails and they kind of just like, we're all right, yeah, we're free. Let's do it now. So I'm going to start going back to back interviews and get them to. Another cool thing that I'm going to be doing with John and Lee is a little bit more of a concise episode format where we focus a little bit more on one specific topic. We're going to make them a little bit like frequently asked question segments. So again, we'll see how those shape up, but I think you guys are going to really get a lot out of them. And then finally, hopefully this weekend, I'm going to be starting to do some stuff with Roger Lawson. And with that, we are going to be focusing on really body composition type stuff and body transformation stuff, focusing on a lot of different aspects of that from the psychological side to, you know, planning or programming and nutrition and stuff like that. And one of the things that we're going to be kind of using is, now I myself, man, have been slacking off when it comes to making sure that I am where I need to be in terms of my physical shape. So we're going to use me as like a guinea pig and a little bit of an example. We're going to get kind of in depth into my past with some of that stuff, because I think you guys will kind of come to find that I'm not too different from you when it comes to, you know, making sure that you're getting in your training and stuff like that. You'll see. It'll be really cool. I think you guys will, again, get a lot out of it. And we're going to be bringing a lot going into the new year and going into the next, you know, up to episode 300 or so. So stick around. Next up is Nick Winkelman. And again, I want to send out a huge thanks to the guys at the PTAdvantage.com. They're supporting the show. And again, if you're in the industry and you're, you know, a strength coach or you're a personal trainer and you're looking to find some other revenue sources, like doing some distance coaching clients or maybe even taking on some extra clients that at your facility, but they can only afford programming and not necessarily personal training, the PTAdvantage.com is the perfect way to do that. They give you tons of different resources and tools to use at your disposal to make sure that that client is getting all the attention that they need. So check them out. Again, it's the PTAdvantage.com. Those guys are great. They're doing great stuff. And it does help, you know, if you go check it out. I don't know if you can, if there's like a comment section, but if you mention that you heard about it on the FitCast, I would appreciate it. That'd be really cool of you to do. Either way, I recommend at least heading over there, checking it out, and giving it a look. I think you will be super impressed like I was. So, again, no more talking. More talking, but I'm going to talk to Nick Winkelman. So let's get to that. With me right now is Nick Winkelman. You probably know him from being at Athletes Performance, but he is the Director of Education and Performance Systems and the Director of Methodology there over at AP. And he's a guy who I've seen a couple times at the Perform Better Circuit. And I keep, like, every time I go and see him, like, I got to get Nick on the show. I got to talk to him about a lot of this stuff because I come away with a lot of questions from his talks, a lot of stuff to think about. But now I finally locked it down. Nick, it's great to have you on the show.
Honored to be on the show finally.
Like I said, you know, you know, going to one of the great things about this industry is the perform better stuff, where we get to really just have everyone show up at a location and get to see a bunch of presentations. And when I saw yours, you really went over a lot of the athletic performance stuff, going through speed and power development. We were talking a little bit before the show. We'll try to make this a little bit broader for the audience of the show, but we also do have a lot of strength coaches and personal trainers out there that are going to be super interested and ready to geek out on this stuff as well. So we'll do our best to kind of hit all sides of things. But one of the first questions that we got from Brian, and I think it's a great starting point, is, you know, can you discuss your career path to get to where you are today? Because I think that's, when I saw you speak, that was one of the first things I was kind of blown away with.
It's an area of the field in terms of kind of career development that I've really reflected on my career and tried to help others, guiding them, as I think someone said on Facebook, reverse engineering my own career. If I look back at it, I think everyone who has a passion for what they do had a single moment in time that kind of set their career or their drive, and I'm no different in that category. When I was in high school, went through kind of one of those total body transformations, you know, lost a ton of weight, became exponentially more athletic, ended up getting into powerlifting on top of football and basketball, and really had a great support system in high school with one of our strength coaches, Rudy. So in going through that process, I was so motivated to see the change in my body. And in seeing that change, I instantly felt that my career path had to involve something that helped other people also achieve whatever their motivational end goal was. And as it just turned out, you know, exercise and sports science was my specific medium for helping people achieve their goals. So when I got to Oregon State University, I was a pre-med student within the exercise and sports science department. And funny enough, before I even knew who Mark Verstegen was, who athletes' performance was, I already had this kind of concept in my mind that I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon that understood about the training industry so that I could make better recommendations to my patients. So funny enough, this whole concept of seamless integration was embedded in my mindset at a young age. But I was able to meet an unbelievable mentor in Guido Van Rijsselaer, who also now presents at the Perform Better Circuit my sophomore year. And his background, he's from Belgium, a self-taught English, basically walked into the Seattle Mariners organization with a manual on him wanting to be an athletic trainer, unbelievably self-motivated person. And as it turns out, he ended up spending over 6 to 9 years in Major League Baseball. And he goes way back with Mark Verstegen when Mark was still at IPI in Florida, Aaron Mattis, and many of the other connections that kind of came from the early Velocity days back in Florida. So case in point, I met him and he started mentoring me on my path. He told me to not only look at school, right, as what I need for my degree, but school to leverage my career. So every summer he had me do specific internships. He got me internships in the medical field with the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. I was able to work with the Oregon State baseball team in 2006 that won the national championship. I was the director of personal training at Dixon Recreation Center at Oregon State and worked with him kind of in post rehab. But the most critical moment was my sophomore year when he pulled out this pamphlet and basically said to me, if you want to be the best, if you want to work with the best, then this is the place, this is the person that you need to work with. And I can see it vividly in my mind. It was Mark Verstegen's first pamphlet from Athletes Performance in Tempe, Arizona. And basically from that moment on, I basically tell people that I spent 3 years of college preparing for my internship so that when I came out of college, I had 3 years of experience interning across medical, performance, and personal training. I got hired on at Athletes Performance shortly after my internship. Apparently, I was prepared, and Guido Van Rijsselaer is the person to thank for that. And and coming into athletes' performance. I started as a performance coach, but had this drive to also help with our performance mentorship program. And the reason I had that drive was when I was at Oregon State University, I was fortunate enough to teach our internal personal training certification course. So at a young age, I was experienced both with coaching on the personal training, strength and conditioning side, but also on the education front. And I had a deep passion for that. So it was a brilliant merge, allowing me to come into AP, be both a performance coach working with athletes on a day-to-day basis, as well as working with elite coaches and personal trainers through our mentorship program. And my role within that really has stayed true over the last 6 years, now getting to work at the highest level of performance across our NFL Combine program, the highest level, being able to direct our education program, and then really take that integrated knowledge and help permeate that through our training systems and presenting at great conferences like Perform Better. So if I look at my career path, I had the passion at a young age. I was highly motivated, so I was prepared in that sense. But like all luck, it's preparation and opportunity. And my mentors gave me the opportunity as I went through college and now with Mark working at Athletes Performance. And I think that for me has just been the key piece to capitalize on those opportunities, but always be motivated and passionate to execute against those. And that typically is my biggest recommendation to young strength coaches out there is find your passion, find your focus, get a great mentor, and just keep your head down and work every single day like it's your last. And know that every single moment, interaction in person is an opportunity to get better, or at least in certain cases, learn the things you shouldn't do. So that's kind of been my mindset in simple terms, and be glad to dive deeper in any of those aspects.
One of the really cool things that you guys are doing at AP is that whole educational aspect where, you know, you have the mentorships at Athletes Performance, and you just mentioned before we started recording, you're going to be heading overseas to the UK to do some stuff as well. How did that all come about? It seems like it's really exploded in the last couple of years with you guys, where, you know, I talked to obviously Nicole, who's there with you guys now, and she's doing a lot of that stuff too. Has that really just kind of exploded over the last couple of years?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because always when you talk to Coach Boyle, he tells me that, you know, he told Mark when he worked for us back in the day that we have to do this mentorship. Mm-hmm. And we now discuss, you know, how successful it has been. So, you know, if we look at the lineage, it basically was out of demand. And roughly 2004, people were saying, hey, you know, Mark, you're the only person really putting this integrated product out there. We want to see what's under the hood. So Mark basically said, hey, let's get our coaches together. Let's put all the modules that we use within our training system, and let's teach a five-day mentorship. So that started back in 2004. Early 2006, they hired on Joe Gomes to expand out the program, which then that gave birth to phase two and phase three. Shortly after being hired in 2007, I started to take that program over from Joe. And as of 2010, we generated our phase four course. So at this point, you know, we have our rehab product, which is our mentorship, our upper quarter, lower quarter examination, and then our four phase performance courses. You know, we're teaching it right now on, we've taught on six continents, over 15 different countries. We average between 30 to 40 courses a year across nutrition, performance, and rehab. And that accumulates to about 500 individuals or 500 seats being sold in terms of the experience itself. And then multiply that by thousands if you account for all the different conferences that we're bringing our education curriculum to as well. And yeah, it has really exploded. You know, when I started the program, we literally ran, you know, four or five courses a year. And we only did that in the United States. To now think that we are running over 40 courses a year in what is going to quickly reach 20 different countries. We are officially teaching both in English and in Spanish. And we really only do this with two full-time staff, myself and Nicole Rodriguez, and then a brilliant group of about five to six other staff that travel on strategic trips. So in looking at this, the welcome that we've gotten from other countries, the demand and the need to learn about performance training systems is skyrocketing. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we thought we were at our tipping point. But if we look at our rate of growth over the last couple of years, I still don't think we've reached our tipping point. That growth is continuing to go up. And at the end of the day, people are realizing that it's phenomenal to have training methods, and training methods are really good. And you can go out and you can learn about how to utilize a kettlebell or a TRX or Olympic lifting. But at the end of the day, those methods are limited by the quality of your training system. And we've taken on the tough task of trying to actually teach people tangible training systems that can merge with the current systems and methods that they have. And I think that's why we continue to get a good response, because we're not teaching people one way to do things. We're teaching them a timeless way in which they can take what they know, what they'll learn from us, and what they'll continue to learn, and give them a system in which all of that can coexist. And I really believe it's invaluable.
The things that we were kind of talking about a little bit off air was, you know, the continued, you know, the continued drive with AP to make sure that you guys are using the latest and greatest. And I think that's what, you know, keeps people coming back to your mentorships and your educational platform. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what you guys have been diving into, and has there been anything that's really been sticking that you think is going to be, you know, this is something that we're going to, you know, throughout the industry that we're going to have to keep an eye out for?
Yeah. It's a great question, and really we could probably spend a couple episodes talking about what is upcoming in our field, so I'm going to try to give a broad strokes perspective. One thing that we have started in the last couple years, and I think this is important for the community to understand, is we've generated internally what's called our performance innovation team. And our performance innovation team is a group of individuals that is literally growing almost with every month, that is tasked with the responsibilities across mindset, nutrition, movement, and recovery to make sure that we are staying on the bleeding edge. We're looking at methods, products, and systems that can be given to people through our education platforms as well as internally used within our training systems. So within this team, we internally collaborate, but then we also are able to collaborate with the Adidas innovation team. We are collaborating with multiple universities on research projects, especially from our core performance and corporate wellness standpoint. So this acts kind of as an internal R&D hub for us to evaluate kind of the efficacy, the reality of using certain methods. The big global trend that I'm seeing right now at AP, and the things that we're having the most discussions around, is testing. And when we look at testing, it's going beyond just the generic field tests. And it's looking at coming up with more robust testing that looks at mindset and behavior change, looking at nutritional habits and kind of indexing those nutritional habits and assessments, and making sure food choices are correct and knowledge around food choices is optimized. We're also obviously looking at movement across the FMS, performance variables, speed, power, capacity with energy systems. And we're also looking at how we can start measuring recovery, both from a tangible standpoint using things like heart rate variability, omega wave, heart rate performance, jump testing, things of that nature, but also, again, looking at people's knowledge around recovery and making sure that they're empowered with the right skill sets. So I think the recommendation I would make for those out there is when they start evaluating how they're testing, looking at testing again laterally, not just at the performance test that we can do and the anthropometric body comp that we can do, but also look at how are we assessing mindset? How are we assessing recovery? How are we assessing nutrition, both from a physical standpoint, but also a knowledge standpoint? And one of our main principles is motivation through education. You know, getting a little more granular, I still think that understanding and quantifying kind of breathing mechanics and how to evaluate breathing, especially from a personal trainer standpoint, is an area of interest. I think a lot of the breathing methodology we're learning right now is coming from the therapy realm. And I think from a scope of practice, we're looking at ways that we can empower coaches with, you know, light breathing screens and strategies there. I think that's an important area that is currently of interest. Obviously, with the great work that, you know, Joel Joel Jamison, Patrick Ward, Charlie Weingroff are doing, looking at integrating, Dave Tenney, integrating heart rate variability from a recovery and a performance standpoint. Obviously, that's an area we're very interested in. You know, I laugh about the omega wave and heart rate variability, not that I think the system is funny, but rather that we had an omega wave back in 2006. And it's great now that I think things have become a bit more tangible and streamlined. So we're revisiting heart rate variability. And for us, it's about how do you scale that into a day-to-day program. Other than that, I think it's also looking at better ways to, you know, quantify things like the FMS. Can we put any kind of light biomechanical analysis on top of the scoring of the FMS, I think, is an area of interest. You know, if you come to AP, you'll notice we have force platforms that we're starting to work with, and we want to see how we can integrate some of the basic performance testing and just getting a bit more resolution on those, you know, FMS being one of them. And then again, I think it's evaluating what are the simple strategies that our clients can be doing outside of the training floor. So are personal trainers educated on how to make recommendations around compression garments, sleep monitoring systems that we're using like MyZio, cognitive training systems like Axon from a sports standpoint. So I think a lot of these support tools, as Mark would say, that help facilitate perfect day strategies, I think those are important. So I think coaches and trainers need to be looking at methods to optimize performance and resiliency beyond what we do day to day on the training floor and beyond the classical methods of testing.
I think you brought up a ton of great points, and one of the ones that stands out are two of them really are one, you know, having that educational you know, the process with your clients and your athletes as well, educating the hell out of them when it comes to recovery, because that's one of the things they tend to, you know, walk out the door, not really follow a lot of what you guys did in that, you know, 1 hour period, and then you see them maybe 47 hours later, and they're right back to square one in terms of being, you know, their tissue quality and their mobility and stuff like that. So did you guys like give them any kind of like take home like information, or how do you go about educating them that way?
Yeah. It starts day one with us. Mm-hmm. So an athlete comes in, and we're gonna test them across, again, mindset, nutrition, movement, and recovery. And if you think of those three silos, there's so many different ways to assess education, current capabilities, and any physical qualities attached to those. Our key thing is once we identify the information about the individual, our goal is to then educate them about their body in terms of their goals. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of relationship is key, because if I can educate them about their mindset, about the nutrition, movement, and recovery, and connect that to their goals, their motivation, or as Mark likes to say, their it, then that brings a lot more meaning, and they're more likely to execute against that. The way we do that then is we build out what we call these perfect day strategies. So then across nutrition, mindset, movement, and recovery, we're going to come up with strategies that they can use when they wake up, before they work out, during their workout, after their workout, and before they go to bed. And these might be simple strategies like roll your foot while you're brushing your teeth, so you keep your massage ball right in your drawer by your sink. You pull it out right next to your toothbrush every single time, and you roll your feet. If you're worried about hygiene, maybe you keep the ball in a different drawer. It might be as simple as getting people to utilize the MyZio product. $100, wirelessly hooks up to any kind of a smartphone. Chuck it on, wear it for a week, figure out what nights you slept well, why did you sleep well, what nights you didn't. And again, you start to self-limit out what the things you need to do to have quality sleep versus poor sleep. And then you don't have to wear the MyZio anymore after that until you start finding yourself getting out of rhythm. It's utilizing simple strategies from a mindset or mindset standpoint, like 4-2-10 breathing, which our consultant in neuroscience, Dr. Roy Sugarman, would say, if you take, you know, kind of 4 seconds to breathe in, hold for 2 seconds, and 10 seconds breathing out, and you do that for 3 to 5 minutes, that can help reset autonomic nervous system, making someone more parasympathetic. So what we try to do is we evaluate them. We tell them how we're going to help them reach their goals, and then we provide them literally simple strategies that can be populated out against a perfect day. And again, this whole concept of perfect day, Mark's been talking about it since his first book. I think that's a big take home for your weekend warriors, your trainers, and your coaches out there. Help your client build out perfect day strategies, literally simply in an Outlook schedule type format or using one of the many reminder apps out there, and start working the strategies. That's the only way. It's not enough to identify. You got to identify, and then you got to put a strategy that the client can execute against to actually get the throughput and the results.
Awesome stuff. I think one of the things that we definitely have to hit on is the performance side of things, and the NFL season is in full effect right now, but finishing up for the college season, you guys have like upwards of like, you know, like 70 or 80 guys there just this previous before the draft. Can you talk a little bit about what's that process like for those athletes? They sign up, they want to go with the combine program with you guys. What's that kind of process, however many weeks out of the draft? What does that look like for you guys when you try to get them ready to, perform at their best before they have to, get ready to do that testing?
Yeah, it's quite an extensive, very immersive process. Based on whether or not an athlete's in a bowl game, they will show up over the first 3 weeks of the year. The combine program is technically 8 weeks, culminating at the combine during the eighth week, which is typically somewhere between February 20th and 24th in terms of the days that the athletes are actually going to perform on the field. An athlete will come in, and again, they're going to get assessed by our full team. So they're going to get nutrition consulting. They're going to get performance testing across all the combine tests. They're going to get a full orthopedic assessment evaluation. And then we have additional kind of cognitive sports psychology resources as well that each athlete is going to go through. The way the week works out is they're training with us 6 days a week from AM to PM, every aspect of their day is controlled. So if I was to kind of walk you through a day, athlete's going to come in the AM. They're going to grab their breakfast about an hour to an hour and a half before their first training session. If it's a Monday, they're going to be meeting with me in the morning to go through a 60-minute acceleration speed session. As soon as they're done with that, they're going to go to a 30-minute power session in the weight room, primarily comprised of Kaiser-based equipment-type training. From there, they're going to have a bit of a break. Those breaks between AM and PM are going to be comprised of media training, cognitive training, sports-specific training. So we actually bring in NFL coaches for at least 2 of the 8 weeks for them to go through the technical, tactical skill sets that they have to express at the combine. So there's a whole number of additional non-performance-based items that those athletes have to get done between the AM and the PM. The athlete would then come back roughly 2 to 3 hours later for their PM session. They would meet with me again. Again, if it's a Monday, we would do 30 minutes of just strictly working on a 3-point start and 5 to 10 yard acceleration. And then that would be followed by their larger lift of the day, a 60-minute lower body lift. So every athlete is going to do 2 movement sessions and 2 strength sessions a day, accumulating 1.5 hours of movement, roughly 1.5 hours of lifting. Every one of those sessions is wrapped with pre, during, and post-workout nutrition. Plus, they're going to go through an extensive hydrotherapy, soft tissue, and massage program on a day-to-day basis. Monday, Wednesday, Friday is all of our linear speed, and in the afternoon is our big strength sessions. Wednesday afternoon, we do a pool workout. So there's really only 2 massive lower body workouts a week, and then 1 nice kind of pool flush session. And then Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday are our big upper body lift sessions, obviously geared at maximal strength and the 225 bench press test. And we only do movement in the afternoons on Tuesday and Thursday, where we focus on the 5-10-5 and the L drill. And then from a movement perspective, Saturday is reserved for video analysis, mindset, visualization, everything kind of needed to set the body up for the following week. And again, all of this is seamlessly integrated with nutrition consult services on a weekly, if not day-to-day basis. as well as physical therapy, both from an actual PT standpoint for those that come in injured, and we also have PT for many of the athletes from a preventative standpoint. And we further support that with two sessions a week where every single athlete in a group format works with the therapy department to go through Pilates and FMS-based corrective sessions. So 6 out of those 7 days, these guys are hammering all the way from AM to PM. All energy they have to do is get home, put their feet up, and I think the athletes are still only playing video games. So whatever the new Call of Duty is, that is the only secondary thing these guys are going to do when they're not performing with us. And then we all head to the combine. I go there with a team of therapists and nutritionists. I'm typically the movement coach on staff. We are there for 7 days of immersive AM all the way till AM to AM working with the guys. Last year we had 90 athletes floating through there. So I'm literally helping guys on behalf of my athletes and my other coaches refine all their movement up to the, you know, kind of the, that 11th hour. And we get to be there literally 100 yards away watching live with everyone else on TV these guys actually perform. So there's no hiding for our coaches and our team. Everything we do is going to be exposed nationally to the teams, the agents, and the athletes. So it's very exciting, and that's why we take this process so seriously.
Things that I got to check out when I was out in Arizona for the Meeting of the Minds thing that Perform Better did last year, it was really cool that we got to have a tour of the facility, and Mark was showing us really the setup that you guys have in terms of like the combine and with like the professional athletes. You try to create an atmosphere where, you know, you want them to almost stay there the whole day. So you make sure that they're getting in the right meals, they're getting in all their training, they're getting in their massage work, their recovery work and stuff like that. Do you know how did that like mindset come together? Because it seems to be super successful with you guys.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the genesis of the whole thing, you really got to go back to Mark and Mark's family that is up in, you know, Squim, Washington, and all of his siblings. I mean, he comes from a family that is just embedded in hard work. He has an education-based mother. So, you know, systems, professionalism, execution at the highest level has always kind of been in Mark's fabric. And similar to me, or rather me similar to him, when he was in college, he had the opportunity to work under some great strength coaches. And when he no longer was an athlete, he had the opportunity to very quickly get into strength and conditioning. So I think he was able to get into the field very, very young. When he got to IPI, the International Performance Institute, within Ball Terry Institute in Sarasota, Florida, which is now all a part of IMG Academies, I think he realized that there was a limitation in only providing training services, because they were trying to educate these people on, hey, it's not just about training. You got to have the right nutrition. You got to have the right recovery. You got to have the right mindset. And in looking at that, he realized that the platform that he was currently working in didn't fit that need. So mid-90s, he took a flight out to Tempe, Arizona, and him and his wife, Amy, decided that this would be the settling ground for the first athletes' performance site, and they built it out, right? Opened their doors in 98, 99, and within that, again, he wanted to provide almost an Olympic-caliber environment, but in the private sector, to provide a pit crew-type mentality to every athlete, to support them across mindset, movement, nutrition, and recovery, not only with what we did, but also that the staff we provided. He knew, though, that the only way that we could do that is through this culture of performance that was permeated by breaking down walls, checking your ego at the door, and having the highest level of humility. Hence the reason the facility is called Athletes Performance, not Mark Verstegen's gym. He wanted it to be athlete-centered, a place where athletes could come safely and effectively and know every possible thing they could need within our ethical means was delivered. And I think that culture, that mindset, is what attracted many coaches to Mark and to athletes' performance. And as they talk about in Good to Great, you got to get the right people on the bus. And what continually amazes me about Mark is his ability to put people first and find the right people to put on the bus. The staff that we work with at AP and CP is just second to none. Phenomenal. And everyone has this commonality, no matter what their job is, of humility first, athlete first, and team-oriented approach. And when you build a culture that believes in that, systems and facilities to support embody that, I think you then generate the experience that you had when you come to our facility, and that you don't want to leave, that every aspect from the front door to the back door resonates performance, and you know and feel that just by being here, you are getting better. And that kind of in broad strokes is the background of Mark and the genesis of this culture and the system. And I'll tell you something about Mark Verstegen. He daily impresses me in his unwavering ability to do everything with the greatest level of humility, passion, and selflessness, where he will always put the athlete, the client, and most importantly, right, his staff first. And I never see him a waver from that. It's quite incredible.
All awesome stuff. And, you know, just from the short time that I've hung out with him at seminars and stuff like that, you know, I can definitely attest to that. He's a very, you know, does some... As a scared kid going up to him for the first time at a seminar, yeah. After reading, like, no joke, I got... His book, Core Performance, was the very first training book I ever bought. And, you know, being able to kind of see him in person, you know, a couple of years ago when I was still in college, and just having him be super cool and start off a conversation and ask me what I've been learning in school and stuff like that was one of the coolest things ever. And it's, you know, you're 100% right about that. As we kind of like get towards wrapping up, the last couple of things that I want to talk about. One, I think it's you know, super interesting that you looked so in depth into the whole bilateral deficit concept for your thesis, and you even presented it at the NSCA National Conference back in 2006, I think. So. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, where your mindset is with that, and, you know, how that's still kind of like one of those things in our industry where people still fight about, is the whole bilateral deficit thing. You know, should you squat? Should you not squat? You know, where's your stance on that whole debate?
Oh, this is opening a can of worms. Huh?
I know, right?
Yeah. Well, let me first. We're really talking about two things, because the bilateral deficit phenomenon is different than the unilateral versus bilateral training kind of argument. So if we look at the bilateral deficit, I was reading some papers in college in my fraternity, and you know, there's a loud party going on, and I'm just geeking out reading these freaking articles, which I'm sure a lot of people on the line here can attest to. They currently do, and I came across this article on the bilateral deficit, and it was just a simple scientific paper explaining what it was. And for those that don't know what it is, it's fairly simple actually. If we look at the EMG that, let's say, the bicep muscles express when you do a bilateral barbell bicep curl. There's an alliteration for you, right? So we look at the EMG within each of those muscles when I do something bilaterally, when the brain knows that both limbs are lifting that weight. What we find is that the individual torque produced and the individual EMG muscle activity produced when a arm works in sequence with the other arm is actually less than when you perform that same movement with one arm. So fundamentally, if you add up the torque you produce with your left arm and your right arm and the EMG that both of those arms produce, and you put those numbers together, that's actually greater than the amount of EMG and torque that we see produced when the arms work at the same time. So this has been termed the bilateral deficit, because you have a deficit in activation of muscles when the limbs work at the same time. So any strength coach, any personal trainer hears the word deficit, they think, well, how can I fill that deficit? How can I get the same level of muscle activation and same level of torque when I do things bilaterally as I do with things unilaterally? So I started reading more about this, and I found a paper by Dr. Peter Vint, who, funny enough, is now at the Olympic Center in Colorado Springs. He wrote a paper called Decoupling the Bilateral Deficit. And what he found was, during a leg extension task, if you started the movement with one leg, but then you finished with both legs, you actually could decouple, right? Undo this deficit and actually see increased EMG and torque production in each of the independent limbs while they're producing a bilateral task. So this got my mind running, and I'm thinking potentiation. So the same way that we utilize a heavy squat or a high-speed squat before we go into some kind of a jumping maneuver to potentiate the neuromuscular system so it produces greater neural drive and output, I'm like, I might be able to do that same freaking thing doing unilateral exercises before bilateral exercises. So I went to our training facility, and I started playing around with this. So because I didn't want stability to be a limiting factor, I would use the Smith machine to do my unilateral work before I went into some kind of barbell bench press. So I'll never forget, I had a client in college, and for whatever reason, he could bench press 185, 6 to 8 times, no problem. But for whatever reason, there was this mental barrier with 225. He couldn't even do it one time. And one day I decided, okay, we're going to give this a go. So instead of warming up with bilateral, I just warmed him up doing unilateral. And literally, this was like a week later after I had this thought. So I got him in the Smith machine. I picked a weight that was heavy enough to kind of give him activation, but not so heavy to fatigue him. And I literally had him stabilize and do unilateral presses in a horizontal bench press in the Smith machine. We rested. We did this 2 or 3 times. Again, just warming up. And then we went over to the bench press. And I kid you not, I'll never forget it. It's as vivid as day in my mind. He did 225 6 times. I was floored, right? And again, researchers would say there's a whole bunch of reasons why he might be able to do that, but I was convinced. So I started trying this with bicep curls, leg extensions, bench press, anything that I could easily facilitate unilateral before bilateral. The idea became so strong in my mind that inevitably we looked to do a lab study. We utilized an isokinetic machine. We looked at EMG and torque within the bicep muscles, doing a preacher curl type bicep curl. And we had about 10 untrained subjects. The raw data favored that actually, again, my theory had some efficacy, that doing unilateral activities could facilitate greater activation during a bilateral movement. But again, as statistics will go, if you don't have a large enough sample size, you can't always show statistical significance. And again, in retrospect, I was an undergrad. The study design wasn't the best in the world. But still to this day, I believe that this is a practice that we could use as strength coaches. The simple of it is you have your athlete warm up doing unilateral based repetitions of a similar task before they go into their heavier working sets bilaterally. I've even done this acutely where with dumbbells, and I encourage everyone on the call, next time you do a dumbbell bench press, try this out. Put both dumbbells up, do them alternating one at a time. The second you feel alternating wise, you can't get any more repetitions in, leave about 1 rep in the tank and go right to bilateral. I promise you'll be able to squeeze out another 4 to 8 repetitions based on your conditioning. So in looking at that, there's some acute and then kind of potentiation ways you can use an integrated unilateral bilateral approach. So that in a long-winded sense is what I did. I have since seen nobody in the literature, mind you, I haven't been really looking deeply, try to continue on this path. And if anyone on is listening who's out there looking for a dissertation topic, decoupling the bilateral deficit would be a great area. I might even do some more research on it once I complete this PhD right now. So that's kind of the simple of it. To answer your second question then, unilateral versus bilateral. I'm going to be very neutral in this case. I think that based on an individual, there is a place for both. I am still a very big advocate of bilateral squatting, if you would, whether it be a front squat, a back squat, a safety squat, a trap bar deadlift, a deadlift of sorts, as long as your neuromechanics have the capacity to handle it safely. I still believe that bilateral squatting will give you the greatest neuromuscular response in terms of strength gains. And this is not only seen on myself, but just so many athletes, and the literature supports it. I mean, there's no way you can argue that bilateral training helps to facilitate the greatest strength response. At the same time, I don't think bilateral squatting is for everyone. So I think the rear foot elevated, the single leg RDL, the split squat positions are unbelievably valuable. And we need to continue to challenge ourselves to safely load those patterns to see what we can do. Maybe we can generate enough strength gains utilizing unilateral patterns in certain sports. But if you play a contact sport where maximal power, maximal strength, relative power, relative strength are key indicators, then I think at a young age, we need to safely teach you how to bilaterally move and be able to load the body correctly. But at the end of the day, there's no absolute black and white answer. But I will never sit here and say that unilateral is better than bilateral or vice versa. You have to know how to blend both the methods. And again, that's why I like the research I did on the bilateral deficit. It shows that those potentially could have a nice kind of coexistence within even the same training set structure.
Stuff. And I think that, you know, everyone out there, you got some homework to do. Play around with it a little bit and, you know, see what happens. There could be some very interesting results. The last thing I wanted to hit on, and we kind of talked about it at the start, but, you know, again, the whole educational system that you guys have put together at AP, it's become, you know, one of the, you know, big things that you guys are known for. Especially in the fitness industry, you have a lot of trainers and coaches going over to you guys to get an idea of what you guys are doing and get an in-depth look. What is there anything that's coming up down the road that people should keep a lookout for where you're going to be presenting at, or where can they get some more information on, you know, maybe coming out to AP for one of the mentorships?
Yeah. So anything athletes performance, people can go to athletesperformance.com/education. That's going to have every U.S.-based and every international-based course that we have out there. And again, on there, you're going to see phase 1-4, rehab mentorship, upper-lower quarter, as well as anything we're doing in the nutrition space. If people are interested in me specifically, I'm always presenting on behalf of our partners and Athletes Performance. And you know, when you go out and see me speak personally, you are going to get a fresh topic and something that might not even yet be integrated into our mentorship program. So this year, I'll be speaking again at Perform Better, a couple of different NSCA state clinics, as well as I'm doing a lot more college-based speaking. I'm doing a conference at Michigan, a conference at the NC2A Basketball Strength Conditioning Coaches Conference this year, as well as I will be doing some practicals and presentations at the NSCA Personal Trainer Conference, as well as at the IDEA World Conference. And if anyone wants to know about those, I keep my Facebook and Twitter at Nick Winkleman updated. And again, if you want to get the freshest things that both I'm looking at as well as Athletes Performance is looking at, I'm really a big advocate of Twitter. I feel if you can't put a concise statement in those characters, then maybe you need to read a little bit more until you can whittle it down. So I'm a big fan of Twitter.
Very cool. Well, Nick, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and you know, kind of geeking out with me on this stuff. Like, again, I feel like I could talk to you, you know, forever about this stuff. But hopefully down the road, I'm going to be seeing you at one of the Perform Better seminars and buy you a beer and talk about a little bit more about some of this stuff.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's always an honor for me on behalf of AP to get out and speak and help others out there. That's what we're all about.
Very cool. Thanks again, Nick.
Thanks.